Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're going to be reading from chapter 36 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the slaying of Arista, the bull demon. Text 1. Sukadev Goswami said, "The demon Arista then came to the cowherd village, appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump. He made the earth tremble, and he tore it apart with his hooves. Aristasura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. My dear king, clouds hovered about the sharp-horned Aristosaurus hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberations of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. The domestic animals fled the pasture in fear. O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda for shelter, crying, 'Krishna, Krishna.' When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, 'Don't be afraid.' Then he called out to the bull demon as follows, 'You fool, what do you think you are doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you?' Having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arista with the loud sound. The Lord then casually threw his mighty serpentine arms over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. Thus provoked, Arista pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arista rushed toward him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Aristasura by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up and, breathing hard and sweating all over his body, again charged him in a mindless rage. As Arista attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he lay prostrate, vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine. Kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Aristasura thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Having thus killed the bull demon Arista, he, who is a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram." It's a short purport here. I'll read it because it's not long. It says purport. This verse exemplifies the sublime contrast of spiritual qualities within Sri Krishna. In one four-line verse, we simultaneously learn that the Lord Krishna killed a powerful and wicked demon, and that his boyish beauty gave festive pleasure to his young girlfriends. Lord Krishna is as hard as a thunderbolt and as soft as a rose, depending upon our attitude toward him. The demon Arista wanted to kill Krishna and all his friends, so the Lord beat him into a wet rag and killed him. The gopis, however, loved Krishna, and thus the Lord boyishly reciprocated their conjugal feelings. And translation again. After Aristasura had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. That powerful sage of godly vision addressed the king as follows. Now, there's a little section here, which I think I'll read. Yeah, I'll read this purport. It says here, the term Deva Darshan can be understood in many ways, all of which are consistent with the context and the purport. Maybe I'll just skip ahead. Okay, here it goes. From the Puranas, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has quoted 20 verses describing a joking conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna killed the demon Arista. This conversation, so kindly quoted by the Acharya, describes the origin of Radhakund and Shyamakund, Radha and Krishna's bathing ponds. The verses are as follows. I won't read the Sanskrit, just the English translation. The innocent young gopi said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull. Alas, even though Arista was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow. So you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritrasura. But how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds?" Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch." With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, "This is the water of the Bhogavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here." When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows. "See all the holy places. See all the holy places." But the gopis replied, "We don't see them as you describe." Then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up. "I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Dirhika. I am the river Soma. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamrapani. I am the holy place Pushkar. I am the river Saraswati. And we are the Godavari, Yamuna, and Rava rivers, and the confluence of the rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters." After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant and said, "I have produced a pond containing all various holy places, whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasures of Lord Brahma." Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows. "I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work." Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Arista's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began to digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands, and in this way, a divine pond manifested in the span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they had produced. He said, "Go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companion should fill this pond with water from mine." But Radha replied, "No, no, no, no. This is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. I will have my countless gopis, companions, bring pure water of the Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own water and thus make it its renown unequaled in the entire world." Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who is an intimate associate of all the holy places. Suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Vrishabhanu, Radharani. Then, with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. "O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them. And thus, he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. He is always anointing your lotus feet with the nectarian charu and yavaka and decorating them with ankle bells, and he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke of his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our desire bear fruit. Hearing this prayer spoken by the representative of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "So kindly tell me your desire." And then they told her plainly, "Our lives will be successful if we can come to your pond. This is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corner of her eyes, the daughter of King Vrishabhana replied with a smile, "Please come." Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. Thus, gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radha Kund with their waters. Lord Hari then said, "My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are." Radha replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastised Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me." That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radha Kund, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani a brilliant flash of lightning, filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds. Right. So, what to say about these exalted affairs? I guess I'm supposed to say something because there's about 20 minutes left here. Well, one thing is that these are activities that are engaged in by very exalted personalities. And when we read these pastimes from the Krishna book, Prabhupada, at least in the Krishna book, Prabhupada doesn't directly mention it. Perhaps he does in some of the purports here in the 10th canto. But these different various personalities who are participating in these activities, these pastimes with Krishna, were also very elevated personalities. There's one verse, Prabhupada used to quote this verse frequently, and actually he paraphrased it yesterday. When Judhakarma was reading, I heard the different elements of it, and as he was reading, Prabhupada didn't actually quote the verse, but it's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. I'll read the Sanskrit and read the translation. Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena maya shritanam naradadakena sakam vidrahu krita punja punja. Prabhupada quoted that frequently, that verse very frequently. And here's the translation. Those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys, or, of course, they're playing with the Lord, or they're taking care of the Lord as parents in the Vatsalya Rasa, or they're engaging in romantic activities with the Lord and the conjugal rasa. So this is as a result of engaging in accumulating volumes of pious activities over many, many lives. And of course, some of these personalities who we're hearing about in these pastimes are Nitya Siddha devotees. They're devotees who actually descended from the spiritual world along with Krishna in order to assist Krishna in the performance of these pastimes. And it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that actually when Lord Chaitanya was here 500 years ago, all these same personalities appeared again, and they were participating in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, you know, assisting him in the same way. His family members, his friends, and so many of the different people he came in contact with. So there's another nice verse was composed, I believe, by a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, but I'm not 100% sure about that, but it's a Brahmin that Lord Chaitanya came in contact with when he was traveling back from Vrindavan, back to Jagannath Puri, staying at the home of, I can't remember who, another Brahmin perhaps. But so this Brahmin composed this verse, and this gives us some insight into what our attitude should be towards these great personalities who have appeared and are assisting Krishna and Lord Chaitanya in their pastimes. So this verse goes, Shutim apare smritim itare, bharatam anye bhajantu bhavabita, aham iha nandam vande yashalinde param brahma. And the translation is, this is actually the devotee who composed this verse, his name is Raghupati Upadhyaya. It says, those who are afraid of material existence worship Vedic literature. Some worship smriti, corollaries to Vedic literature, and others worship the Mahabharata. As far as I am concerned, I worship Maharaj Nanda, the father of Krishna, in whose courtyard the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is playing. So he views these personalities as worshipable. And there's a song, I believe, by Narottam Das Thakur, Gaurangera Sangha Jani Nitya Siddha. I can't remember the Bengali or the Sanskrit, but he makes this point that all these personalities that were, assisting there, participating in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna, they're eternally liberated souls, and we should understand them as such. And just by accepting them as such, understanding them as such, we can make tremendous advancement in devotional service ourselves and progress towards the highest goal of life. So, another point that comes to mind as I'm reading all this is that, for somebody who's new to Krishna consciousness or even to, those of us who might have been in devotional service for quite some time, you might feel like, well, okay, I'm hearing these things, but it's pretty far out, it's really interesting, but how do I really, increase my appreciation for these topics, for these descriptions? How do I get a deeper understanding? How do I get increase my interest to hear about these things? Because as Judah Karma, we heard from him yesterday at the beginning of his class that, this is very auspicious to be in the association of the devotees hearing these topics about Krishna. And this is in a holy place like that. So how do we actually increase our appreciation for this? We have this good fortune, but sometimes we're just feeling, well, okay, so what? How do we go beyond that attitude and enter into, develop that devotional attitude? Okay, well, the answer to that is given right there in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's in the second chapter. There's a nice verse. Shushu shows Shradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirta Nasheva at that. By rendering service to the great souls who are fully dedicated to executing the mission of the Lord, great service is done. And by doing that, one acquires an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. So that's the key right there. This is like kind of bringing this back down to earth, so to speak, or where the rubber meets the road. That if we want to actually, properly understand these topics and increase our appreciation for them, is what we have to do. We have to try to serve the great souls, our spiritual master, and, those who are dedicated their lives to assisting him in his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's how we'll gain a greater insight, a greater appreciation for these pastimes. I had actually, to be honest with you, some practical realization this over the last couple months. I was away traveling Sankirtan. And one thing that happened, among many, many things on this trip, was that I had an iPod, and on that iPod I had all Prabhupada's lectures downloaded. Is that the correct word? On that iPod. And it went missing. So there I was. That was my program for how I was going to while away those hours on the long drives between, approximately 6 hours of driving every day between one place to the other when we were going. So now I had to come up with a new program. So I started, reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I noticed that, I was thinking as I was reading it, because, every day was like a big austerity on this thing that we were doing, starting Sankirtan between 7:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning, working straight through till about any time between 4 and 7 o'clock, and then just hopping in a vehicle and driving for, you know, up until 9:30 at night, getting, if we're lucky to stop that early, getting up early the next, same thing day after day after day. So it was hard. You know, it was a lot of tapasya. But one thing I noticed is every day when I was picking up that Chaitanya Charitamrita, it was just like more and more interesting. I mean, it's just like, I remember thinking to myself, wow, haven't I been reading this book for 38 years now? And I have. But every day I was feeling like, I never picked up on this before, or I never appreciated that before, I never thought of that before. It was just, you know, newer and newer. What was that first? Bayam tu navatripyamai yat utama shloka vikrame. Yashrinvatam rasa gyanam swadu swadu pade pade. There's a verse, I think that's also in the first canto, about how we never tire about hearing these pastimes, and they just get sweeter and sweeter, you know, as you go on. So I was like experiencing some sort of small, modified version of that, how it was just becoming like, I was looking forward to it. I was actually looking forward to the end of the day when we could start driving again, and I can just pick up that big all-in-one volume Chaitanya Charitamrita that we had in the van and open it up and just start reading and, you know, getting absorbed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And so that was really nice. And so I experienced directly how that process works, how by rendering service to the great soul, because that's how, I mean, that's what I was thinking the whole time when I'm doing this. I'm doing this to serve my spiritual master. Prabhupada wanted these books distributed. He wanted book distribution on the whole to increase. So that's why I'm out here trying to do this, to, you know, distribute a lot of books myself and encourage these younger devotees to do it also. If they see somebody that's more than twice their age doing it, maybe, you know, hopefully that might give them some inspiration to take the whole activity seriously, not just for that period of time, but for the rest of their lives. And they'll, you know, do for a long time themselves. So, you know, thinking like that, I was performing that. And the reciprocation was that increased taste, I guess, or interest in reading Prabhupada's books, particularly, as I said, was reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that was very nice. That was very nice. And what time is it anyway? 8 o'clock, okay. Maybe I can make one more point that... I'll make another point. if I do say so myself. So we need to do like that. You know, I mean, I was just relating my personal experience, but if I could be so presumptuous as to suggest that actually I think we should all try to do like that, that, you know, try to think, make a program, how we're going to perform tapasya, to, you know, voluntarily accept some bodily and mental inconveniences to try to, you know, expand the Krishna conscious movement. That's what, I mean, Prabhupada wanted that. Prabhupada wanted that everybody, or as many people as possible in the world, could come in contact with the Krishna conscious movement. And we should all think of that as our duty. You know, obviously it's the collective duty of the temple, but individually we should be thinking, this is my duty to not just chant my 16 rounds and follow the four principles and, you know, come to the temple for the programs and stay out of trouble, because that's there. We have to do that too. But in addition to that, we all should be thinking like, okay, what can I do? What can I do to try to help spread the Krishna consciousness movement? And, you know, we have to cultivate that sort of a mood or an attitude. And I was just reflecting, you know, over the course of the last couple of months that in ISKCON now we have, I don't know how many, I don't know the number, but we have like a lot of Diksha gurus, right? I don't know what the number is, maybe it's 100, say, plus or minus. And we have a lot of Shiksha gurus, you know, we have a lot of disciples of Srila Prabhupada who aren't even acting as Diksha gurus, but are qualified devotees. You know, they've been in the movement 35 plus years, and they know the philosophy, they know the books, and they're actually quite capable of, you know, guiding devotees in their spiritual lives and instructing devotees nicely, you know, according to the way Prabhupada would have liked to see it done. So that's there too. So that's in place. That's the point I'm making. Those two things are in place. But there's a third type of guru. There's what's called the Vartma Padarshana guru. And we don't have enough of those. We really don't have enough of those. The Vartma Padarshana guru is one who introduces you to the path, one who shows you the path. That's what the actual translation of that Sanskrit is. We need like maybe like, I don't know, thousands more Vartma Padarshana gurus We need thousands. We need, like, that's what actually every single devotee in ISKCON should be thinking, that I have to become minimally a Bhartma Pradakshina guru. I have to be somebody I have to develop myself to in such a way that I'm competent to meet people and try to interest them, attract them to Krishna consciousness. We really need a lot of those types of gurus. You have a question? You have a point you want? No. We need lots and lots of those gurus. Because why? For the simple reason that when you get off this block, you'll see that 99.9999, I don't know how many nines, percent of the population are not at all Krishna conscious and don't even know about this movement. I mean, we're meeting kids. If you tell them, sometimes they would ask, what is this? What is it? What religion is this? I'd say, well, is it Hindu? I'd say, no, this is Vaishnava, follows of the teachings of Vishnu or Krishna. You ever heard of that? No, never. You ever heard? Well, I said, then I'd make it simple. I said, well, how about the Hare Krishna movement? You've heard of that, right? And they go, no. So, maybe like back in the 70s or something like that, we're a household word, but the households have changed. And we're no longer, I'm not so confident or so sure that we're any longer a household word, and, throughout the average folks of America. So we really got to get out there. We have to become Bhartma Pradakshina gurus. It's a great privilege and it's a great responsibility. But that was another realization I had when I was out there, that everybody has a really important part to play as far in the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement. So we shouldn't get, we have to, it's good, to be back here at the temple. And this is what Prabhupada said, the temples are meant for training devotees in hearing and chanting. And then you ship them out, to preach. So I kind of think I go with that paradigm, that the temples are places where we, organize our activities, train devotees, but really our business is out there, trying to give this to people who don't know anything, conditioned souls, people don't know anything about, trying to help them become Krishna conscious. So, anyway, I'll stop there. And, Om Kar Prabhu. Oh, while he's waiting for the microphone, I'll make one more point. And when you try to do that, Krishna helps. Krishna helps, he reciprocates. Just like, there's that story when Haridas Thakur was chanting in the cave, and people were coming to see him, and they noticed there's a funny smell in this cave when we come to see you. Well, what's going on here? And Haridas Thakur, I don't know, I'm just chanting. And he wasn't worried about it. But then they figured out, it's a poisonous snake. There's a poisonous snake in this cave. You got to get out of here. And Haridas said, I'm not worried about it. It hasn't bothered me so far. I'm just going to keep chanting. And they said, no, come on. You can't stay here in this cave. This is dangerous. That snake could any time come and, So he wasn't concerned. He just felt, he was fearless because he was a pure devotee of Krishna. So he just felt, Krishna's going to protect me. I'm just going to keep chanting. But these people were getting so much an anxiety about the whole thing that they kept bothering so much that finally at some point Haridas Thakur relented. He said, okay. Look, if nothing changes by midday, I'll go, something like that. He said he agreed, he would go. So when he made that decision, then shortly right after that, in the plain sight of everybody, this big poisonous snake, which was factually there, just crawled out right past everybody and left that cave and just left, forever. Didn't bother him or anybody else from that point onwards. So Prabhupada explains that Krishna's within everyone's heart. And, he dictated to that snake, my pure devotee is about to have to go through all the trouble of relocating. It's going to be a big pain in the neck for him. And, besides that, you're not on his, maybe you should just relocate. So Krishna inspired that snake to leave the cave and go someplace else. That's just an example that came to my mind. But the point is that, when we're trying to serve Krishna sincerely, Krishna's within everyone's heart. He inspires them to cooperate. He inspires them to cooperate. And you can experience that on Sankirtan. Sometimes people say to you, everybody who's done Sankirtan has had this experience of a person, you're stopping them and you're showing them the book and you're talking to them and they say, I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm taking this. I never stop for solicitation on the street. I never do this. I never do this kind. I never talk to people like you. I never, buy a book or give any money to people like you. I don't know why I'm doing this. And they just go ahead and do it. You see? Because Krishna is dictating. Krishna is inspiring them from within. Cooperate with this person. So they do. You see? And so that's from their point, their side of it. And from our side of it, Krishna, he inspires us to come up with new, interesting, creative ways to engage them. You know, one thing I was experiencing when I was doing this, traveling Sankirtan is sometimes I'd get something that worked one day and I tried the same thing the next day and it didn't work at all. The same line, the same, and I had to, what am I going to do now? And you just kind of pray like anything, and then another idea comes in your head, and you try that, and that works. And then the next day, that one doesn't work. So Krishna, he's the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yena Mamupriyanti Tahi. He's, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So if we're really surrendering to Krishna, if we're really trying, Krishna's going to give us the angle. Krishna's going to reveal to us, this is the way that you can capture the hearts of the American youth, or this is the way that you can capture the hearts of the American public. He's going to give us that intelligence. And then, in addition to that, when we put that into action, he's going to inspire them from within to cooperate with us. There's actually one purport in the fourth canto, I believe, where Prabhupada says how, I'll have to paraphrase it. He says, the pure devotee is always thinking about how the conditioned souls can be delivered, And then Prabhupada says, and then Krishna, I can't remember the exact words, but he says something to Krishna in reciprocation that he inspires the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. That's the phrase that stuck in my mind. See, that's the reciprocation. When the devotees are really trying, their best to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, then Krishna, he inspires the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. It's his reciprocation with his devotees who are sincerely trying to please their spiritual master by spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. I actually, my understanding is that's how the Krishna consciousness movement spread at present. It was Lord Chaitanya and Krishna reciprocating with Prabhupada. Prabhupada had such a sincere desire to execute the instruction of his spiritual master that despite the fact that there are really no qualified people here in America, all of us were engaging in illicit sex and intoxication, meeting, gambling, we were all disqualified from any kind of a Vedic standpoint. But simply because Prabhupada had such a sincere desire, such an intense desire, such a strong desire to please his spiritual master, to execute the spiritual master, he basically forced Krishna's hand. At some point, Krishna just had to go, what can I do? None of these people are at all qualified to take the Krishna consciousness, but here's my pure devotee trying so hard to execute the instruction of his spiritual master. All right, okay, you, come on. You get inspired. Come forward. You're not doing anything with your human form of life. Come forward. You're going to have to do some, assist this, my pure devotee here in doing his service. And that's, and that's how we got the opportunity. We just, it was Prabhupada's mercy. We're an expansion of Prabhupada's mercy. Anyway, sorry, you got the microphone there.
So I'd like to make a comment about how Krishna facilitates. And then also I have a question. When you were mentioning about how Krishna reciprocates and assists us with our efforts, it reminded me of that time that we were in Texas, in Austin, and we had just left the college, and I was driving, and we were making a left-hand turn, and I entered the intersection before the light was red, but I wasn't out of the intersection before, so the police car came up behind us, and here go the lights and the sirens, and they pull us over in the gas station, and they make everyone get out of the van, and they search the whole van with their gloves, and because it was a rental van, a cargo van, so the police were like really sketchy. And then when they asked for the license and registration, I gave the registration, but they saw it was a rental van, so they said, well, where's the rental agreement? I said, oh, that's in the hotel room. They said, well, how do we know that you didn't steal this van? And I'm like, oh, my God. so I tell them, okay, take me in your cop car, and we can go over to the hotel, and we can get the agreement. So then the officer goes back, and, he's talking on the radio for, 45 minutes. And I'm just starting to think, oh, my God, what's going on here? And remember, and then you guys were all standing outside, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he says, I don't know why I'm going to do this. I've never done this my entire career as a police officer. I've never once done this. But I'm going to give you a warning this time. So just get lost. So, you know, even against his own better judgment as a police officer, you know, Krishna just overwhelmed him with, you know, how to act. And he let us off. You know, so that's that thing. But then the question I had was, since you're talking about book distribution, and we just read about Krishna and his pastimes with the gopis, maybe you can say something about the connection between the mood of the gopis.
I'll let Ramaswara Prabhu say that. Pass the microphone off. He knows that there's a letter I'm thinking of. There's a famous, famous letter. There was, and I'll just lead into it so he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There was some controversy here in New Dwarka back around 1975 or 6, and if he was preaching it or some other devotees were preaching that Sankirtan was... Go ahead, you take it from there. Go ahead, Prabhu. What's this? You know what I'm referring to, don't you?
Well, I'm very unqualified to speak on this, but Prabhupada always stressed that we have to see living entity, not the body. We should not see this is a man, this is a woman, this is a old person, this is a young person, this is a student, this is a this or that. Prabhupada always stressed that we have to see the living entity. So the devotees pray when they're chanting for that ability to see so that they can perform their service. They're praying so hard to be able to be successful in Sankirtan. So as a result, they're praying so hard all the time to see the living entity, not the body. And gradually, by praying so hard, you begin to treat every living entity as a spiritual member of your family, as a brother, a sister, however. And then you begin to sense Krishna's presence everywhere, and you are trying to bring the family member back to their father, back to their home. And you begin to see that your service is to make an arrangement for that soul to return to Krishna, for that soul to meet Krishna, for that soul to serve Krishna, for that soul to please Krishna. And then you begin to realize that you're assisting the great acharyas, the pure devotees, who embody this ability to make very tasteful arrangements for Krishna to enjoy with his devotees. And Sankirtan is exactly in that mood of bringing the soul back to Krishna to help make a very tasteful arrangement for that soul to give Krishna some pleasure.
Mm. And Prabhupada confirmed that in a letter, right? And he was specifically...
Well, what happened is there was one of my senior god sisters wrote to Srila Prabhupada whether or not book distribution is in that mood. And Prabhupada said, yes, he has spoken correctly. That it is, we're always taught, and Krishna says, no one is more dear to me than the devotee who goes out and brings my message to others. So we've always been taught that service is so dear and special to Krishna. You can't do anything that would please Krishna more than that sacrifice of accepting all that difficulty to try to awaken that living entity. So if that's the highest service, then it's not that big of a stretch to see how it's in that mood.
Thank
you. That rasa.
Yeah, thank you. Archita Prabhu.
Thank you for a wonderful report. You've been missing too long. Thanks. Great, really great to hear you. Point I wanted to ask you to elaborate on is you were saying how some days you go out and you come up with a line or an approach, and the next day it doesn't work, and then you have to, on the fly, you have to kind of adjust. So how do you balance this desire, approach, which many of us do have, to always want to change things? And Prabhupada didn't like that. He said, one of the problems with you Americans is that you're always changing things unnecessarily. How do you balance that with, you know, having to change on the fly?
Well, you know, there's details and there's principles. I mean, you don't change any principles. The principle is you have to surrender to Krishna, get out there, be prepared to work hard, voluntarily accept bodily and mental inconveniences for the purpose of trying to engage people in devotional service. So that principle remains exactly the same. But you can't depend upon mechanical formulas, you know, for executing the service. I mean, as I said, some of the lines I would be using one day, then the next day in another place, they just weren't working at all. So you just have to change the detail, but the principle, the underlying principle, would remain the same. Yeah.
On that same point, I mean, I was invited once to a meeting. I'm not going to name any names, of how to, you know, adjust things so that ISKCON can grow again and this and that. And I said plainly, when they asked me to make a comment, that purity is the force. I said the real problem is that you have people who are trying to, you know, assume roles and take on titles and whatever, but the purity is not there. Purity is the real force. In other words, when the preacher is pure, then the result will be there, but not necessarily in terms of numbers, because that's another mistake that we make. Prabhupada has made this point over and over again, that when you're doing service, don't worry about the result. In other words, you want to please Krishna, you want to please your spiritual master as best as possible, but when you're on the transcendental platform, any result that comes is transcendental. Whether Krishna is sending hundreds and thousands of people or none, like Prabhupada went through that period himself in India and in America for a while, where nothing was coming, does that mean he was in Maya or he wasn't using the right approach? Or no. The service is always perfect when you do it in the right mood, when you do it with purity, when you do it with the desire to please Krishna. That service is perfect, regardless of whether the result is coming or not coming. We get kind of hung up with the result end of it and not so much with the purification end of it. And that's been the problem.
Yeah, Sachin, no, you wanted to say something.
Prabhu, thank you very much. I have a comment first and then a question. You were mentioning that in Sankirtan we need thousands of people out there to reach out. And very often, especially when I used to do the airport, I will meet the Mormons and I will get transcendentally envious when I will ask them, how many are you going out to preach? Because I see them like groups, 200, 100, constantly. And they said about 50,000. And I go, oh my God, how many kids do we have going out? Now, how to put this together? The comment continues because you were mentioning purity and everything. But something amazing happened yesterday. I have a table in UCLA. And students come. And suddenly I saw two girls coming out, you know, like never seen this before. They're pushing out a car where they sell, you know, those Mexican people when they say sell those papilas or ice creams. And I said, what is this? I never seen this. Two young girls and people were just going after, and they were cleaning up, selling and selling and selling. But I seen in USC, other places where these Mexicans go pushing those cars, ringing the bell, no one goes and get any ice cream or like that. So then I came to the conclusion, I said, this is like, you know, when you have young people to go and meet, like money calls money, young people attracts young people to. The principle of purity is there. Of course, Prabhupada, he was very old, you know, we can't compare. He came and attracted thousands. But now, you know, the puzzle was in my mind. I was thinking, how is this, you know? That these young people immediately, they were attracting hundreds and hundreds that were coming. I was like, I went to them and I said, can you give me the secret? Why are you, you know, like, why is it that you're so successful? If I push that car right here now and try to sell what you're selling, probably no one will come. And they started laughing. They just go like, well, I said, I know what it is. You're smiling and you look happy and what you're doing. That's why people are coming to you. So that was my comment. And the question is that, difficult to understand the activities of the pure devotee and similarly of Krishna. So when you mention that Krishna is like a soft, like a rose and hard as a thunderbolt. I was wondering if you or maybe Ramaswami Prabhu had any experience of Prabhupada being hard like a thunderbolt. Because, you know, we hear many times about the softness. Now, you know, if you had any experience like that. Because we always talk about the pure devotee, but we heard, you know, the sweet and nice things. But sometimes the pure devotee also has some hard instructions the disciple can take. Maybe Rameshwar Prabhu can mention.
Do we have time? Come on in. This is really... Okay. It's
all hard. I have so many... I have to think of which one to say. There was a time when... I was in the, working in the BBT, and I was made BBT secretary, and the BBT trustee was Karandar, and then he took a leave of absence. And that left another devotee on the East Coast as the BBT trustee. And there was some difficulty that that devotee was going through. And in the course of that difficulty, I was being given some orders. He was my authority. I was being given some orders which I could not follow because they were not Krishna conscious orders. So I was very bewildered. I didn't know what to do. And I finally wrote to Prabhupada. It was like my third letter about the situation. And I said, I'm sorry, but I can't follow my authority. Now, I can't be an example of not following my authority, so the only thing I can think of doing is to resign. That way I'm no longer disobedient. So Srila Prabhupada wrote back to me, said that we will discuss this at Mayapur. It was around November I wrote, and Mayapur was going to be February. And he said, but in the meantime, I hope that you come to your sound condition of mind. In other words, this idea of resigning, this is an insane, unsound condition. This is a sick condition of mind. So Prabhupada said, I hope you come to your sound condition of mind. I'll take care of the situation, but you need to understand that in spiritual life, there is no such thing as resignation. Once having surrendered, it can never be withdrawn. That was what Prabhupada taught, and he was beating me. He used to beat me in front of reporters and other times too, but you don't have time to hear all that. I just wanted to say one quick thing about your comment about the Mormon preachers. I don't think you should be transcendentally envious, because you could be transcendentally inspired to compete when you see, oh, here's a person who's running around because his goal is sex. So he's being very successful selling something, and that's the goal. So, okay, let's be, in the same way that he's spontaneously attracted to sex, let us be spontaneously attracted to Krishna, and let us run around promoting Krishna. Because that's all they're promoting. When I was on traveling Sankirtan, we went up to Salt Lake City, and I went to the temple, the Mormon temple, and usually they don't let people who are not of their faith go all the way through. But in one of those moments when Krishna affects someone in the heart, I got the tour of every room and of every part of that Mormon tabernacle, the main Salt Lake City tabernacle. Plus I got one of the leaders to be just explaining to me everything about their philosophy. And I finally understood what motivates them. They're very inspirational. But what motivates them, the goal of their religion, is that you become the creator of your own universe and you have unlimited wives to have sex with. Now, I'm saying it in a very blunt way, but in fact, that is their theology. That if you become pure, you get to be the god of your own universe. Your firstborn son will be the Jesus of that universe, but you've got millions of wives. So that's why they're so eager. That's why there's 50,000 of them out there. So don't be so envious about that. Hare Krishna.
That's what Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.